This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Bates Commodities and Normal. Bates Commodities can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at batescom.net.
From the Land to Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the closing market report for the 20th day of August 2015. It's Agronomy Day here on Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois, along with Move-In Day. Very busy on campus, but we'll stay up to speed with what's been happening here and what's been happening in the fields across the Midwest. Chip Flory will join us again from the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. We'll talk with Dan Zwicker, too. He's at CGB Enterprises in Mandeville, Louisiana, and try to discern what direction the market might take in the next several weeks. And we'll discuss the weather forecast as it may influence those decisions. That with Mike Tenorum. He's at T-Storm Weather in Chicago. And it all happens on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
In Chicago on this Thursday afternoon, futures finished in the corn pit a bit higher for the day, up 3.75 at $3.71. And the September contract, December 382.5, up 4. March 393.75, 3.75 higher. And the May futures up 3.75 of a cent to 399.5. July 3.5 higher, 403.5 the trade there. And December of next year at 403, up 4.75 of a cent. Soy complex, 18 cents higher in the nearby September, a gain today, up 9.21.5 at their final price. November at 9.07.25, up 13.75. January at 9.11.75, 13 cents higher in the March futures in the bean pit, $9.11.25, 12 cents higher. May futures up 11.5, July up 10.75, next year's November 11.5 cents higher. Bean meal futures up $6.90, their final trade at $330.90, and the bean oil for the day 9 cents higher, $27.98. September soft red winter wheat at 5.06.25, a dime higher. July of next year at 5.19.75, up 11.25 cents, and the hard red finished the September at 4.81.25, 7 higher. July futures 5.34.25, up 7.75. Feeder cattle were 50 cents lower at 2.13.30 in the August. September down a dime at 2.06.80. Live cattle finished $1.35 higher in the lead option August at $146.60. October at $146.40, up $1.25. Lean hogs down $1.35 today at $64.65 in the October. December were $1.15 lower at $61.12.5. This is the closing market report from Illinois Public Media.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, offering financial products and services specifically for the agricultural industry, including farm real estate and operating loans, crop insurance, and point-of-sale financing, as well as farm cash management solutions.
In the outside markets, crude oil today up 17 cents at $40.97 a barrel. Its last trade, it went to a low, by the way, of $40.21, that in the September contract. September ethanol, $1.46.04, that's down 2 tenths of a cent. Gasoline on the RBOB, 2 1/10 of a cent lower at $1.53.07. And heating oil or diesel fuel at $1.49.07, that's 2 cents lower on the day. Natural gas at $2.75.04, up 3 8/10 of a cent. The Dow Jones Industrial Average is 219 points lower at 17,066. The U.S. dollar down 0.338 at 96.03. And the gold futures on the afternoon at $1,152.75 per troy ounce, a gain today of $25.15. Here's what the weather forecast looks like for the Urbana-Champaign area this afternoon. We'll go to a high of 77 degrees under sunny skies. It's gorgeous outside. Clear this evening, a low of 52, west winds at about 6 miles an hour. And then tomorrow, again, sunny skies, a high of a beautiful 80 degrees on a south wind at 3 to 8. Friday night, clear and 58. Saturday, sunny and 81. South-southeast wind Saturday at 5 to 10, gusting to 15. And Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low of 61. On Sunday, a 40% chance of rainfall, partly sunny otherwise and 81. Monday, sunny and 76. Tuesday, sunny and 77. And Wednesday, sunny skies and 88. More on the weather at the bottom of the half hour.
Support comes from AgriGold, celebrating their 12th year as a major corporate underwriter of Illinois Public Media's Ag Programming and e-newsletter. AgriGold's support allows their customers and growers everywhere to receive quality ag information at no charge. More information on AgriGold is at AgriGold.com.
You, of course, are listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It's a Thursday afternoon, the 20th day of August. Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana, joins us to discuss the marketplace. Dan, it was a nice little rally in the soybeans. Was that all coming from the buy that was confirmed to be from China this morning?
Well, I think it's a combination of things. We have seen a little pickup of demand. I think the Pro Farmer Tour this week is implying, I think traders are reading into it, that USDA's estimates may be a little high, and they kind of think that maybe we saw the biggest production number, so we're getting a little support from that. And then it's deeply oversold after that big plunge down we had after that crop report. And then, of course, this week's move or yesterday's move into new lows for the year, and now we reversed out of there. We got a nice little it's not quite an outside because we equaled yesterday's high, but we did go down underneath yesterday's low. So we do have a nice reversal to the upside here today. And a lot of your momentum indicators are indicating a bullish divergence pattern. And that kind of tees up the stage here that we might be able to put together some kind of rally as we go toward the end of the month, maybe into early September or so.
What kind of fundamental things do you think would have to happen in order for that to take place?
Well, I think we want to see, from a fundamental point of view, we want to see a little more activity, I think, in the export market. I think we need to calm the market down a little bit on the China economy. As I mentioned this morning, I don't think that's going to necessarily impact agricultural trade. I do think, you know, it's a sting to the people, maybe Wall Street companies that deal in other exportable items, but I think when it comes to ag commodities, I don't think the China economy or a weaker yuan, I think that's all friendly to us, on at least on the agricultural side. And then I think if there's a general consensus that maybe we have seen the biggest number, that may attract a lot of maybe domestic end users off the bench. We start picking up a little demand here and a little bit of demand there. I don't think farmers are going to be very willing sellers of commodities at these prices, with November beans down at $9. I think you know, most of your break-even charts suggest something closer to 10. So farmers are going to be, I think, generally tight holders initially, and that same way on the corn. And we don't, you know, we are going to start seeing harvest take hold probably next week in a lot of areas in the Mid-South. In the southern Illinois, we're probably going to start seeing some harvest. But this is the year that we did not have any Mississippi or Arkansas harvests come at us during the month of August. So that big, large carryover that we're carrying over is not as burdensome as it would have been if we would have had early harvest. So there's reasons to kind of be generally positive or optimistic for a recovery rally. And we'll kind of go from there.
I have a question about old crop corn, especially that which is stored in the bin, and specifically for those areas where the corn crop is in very rough condition, and that would, in Illinois, run from Peoria across through the Watseka area and then all the way to the Ohio border. There are many other places, too, that might have a new crop that is not in great condition. Would you be of a mind that they should just leave the bin door shut and ship that new crop when they harvest it and leave the old crop there in place?
That might not be a bad strategy to retain ownership. If you're harvesting poor quality grain, It is not wise to store that. It's wise to probably get rid of it, let the professionals handle it. Your big grain companies have the facilities to handle that and blend it off and all that. And I would keep the good quality corn probably in my bin. So I guess that's the way I would approach that. If I wanted to retain corn ownership, I would rather have the good quality in my bin and push out the weaker quality or the less than desirable type quality.
All right, so now let's go through your tech side. I know we have not quite an outside up day in the November contract on the daily chart. We did make new contract lows. How much hope does that give you, if very much at all?
Enough that I think that we're going to go back into the price levels I think we saw before we had that little bubble up. Before the report, and then of course the slam dunk after the report. So I do think we got a short covering rally that's going back to the 950 level in the making. So I guess I would be, you know, upwards of 30 to 40 cents optimistic that we could have that kind of recovery rally, and then we never know what happens after that. And that's saying, and see, this is kind of what corn has done. Whereas beans went lower because of the favorable potting weather that we had. We did get the rains through the groin region. The corn market has had a steady grind higher ever since the report, and we're back to the levels that we had before we had that pop up, and then we had the scare from China, and then we had the crop report flush. So, you know, these corn is back in the 380s. That's where it was after that long decline that we had during July. Found good support, good value at that level. So I think that's where we're headed on beans back to 950 and the corn here back into the 380s. And now I think we'll need to have something probably new to come into the fundamental picture to move the needle, whether it's harvest delays or we still have early frost yet.
We still have You're the first one that said that on the air.
We got low sunspot activity. That's why the temperatures were generally cool across the midsection of the country this year. And when you have low sunspot activity, I'm not going to predict an early frost, but I'm going to say that you have a greater chance of having one when you have low sunspot activity. So we'll see how that plays out. I guess if there's anything that I did pick up from the Pro Farmer Tour is that the beans got a long ways to go yet. There's a lot of, of course, it's only August 20th in here, but we do, September is just around the corner, and anytime after September, you need to brace yourself for a cold snap coming down from Canada. So we'll see what happens.
Hey, thanks so much for taking the time with us today.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with CGB Enterprises out of Mandeville, Louisiana. He joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. And you can hear him again on our website, of course, at willag.org. That's willag.org. This is Illinois Public Media. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Chip Flory joins us from the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. He's been in Iowa and, I don't know, maybe parts of Minnesota today.
Yep.
Tell me about Iowa to begin with, if you would, please, Chip.
You bet. When we toured the western three crop districts in Iowa, crop districts 1, 4, and 7, and down in the southwest part of the state, that was the most variable corn crop that we've seen on the western leg of the tour. The different planting dates, different maturities, different yield potential, some wide ranges on the yield estimates that came in from the rest of the scouts down in the southwest part of the state as well. So it obviously all goes back to the heavy rains that they were seeing during the planting season. Some of that corn got in a timely fashion. And it's got really good yield potential if it's got enough nitrogen to finish. It seems like if the guys went through the extra expense of giving it an extra shot of post-emerge nitrogen, Those guys are going to be a lot happier than the guys that did not give it an extra shot of N after the crop got up and growing. Soybeans, a little lacking on pod field, makes me a little concerned that we're going to end up with a smaller than normal bean in the southwest part of the state. When we got north of I-80, the consistency came right back to the crop. Some 185 bushel, 190 bushel corn really was kind of our average when we wrapped up in west central Iowa. That was up about 2.7% from a year ago. The southwest district, by the way, was down about 8% from last year. Then when we got up into the northwest corner of the state, consistency was back for the crop. Everything was really looking good until we got close to Spencer. Then there were some issues with excessive water early in the season, some nitrogen loss, maybe taking the top end off of the crop up there. But still, you know, it was 188, 189 bushel with the average yield, up 6% from last year in the northwest district. So things are really looking pretty good. Beans are fairly clean. Not a lot of disease pressure in the soybeans, not a lot of bug pressure. And now they've got the water that they need to go ahead and put on a good finish for that crop. So really a pretty good bean crop in all of western Iowa.
I don't recall. Did you put out a, because I've been pretty busy, did you put out a statewide for Iowa, or is that yet this evening?
That is going to come this evening. The guys on the eastern leg of the tour are going to be covering the eastern half of Iowa today as they make their way up to Rochester to meet up with us today or this evening. So we are traveling through the southern three crop districts in Minnesota, and I'm running a route today that is just south of I-90. You know, pretty ordinary, really. It's falling short of my expectations. Of course, I had some pretty high expectations when we got up to Minnesota. So you got to keep that in perspective. But we've got a wide range on our yield here, 120 bushels per acre up to 220 bushels per acre. So when you see all of that, that obviously we're lacking some of the consistency in this far southern route to really give us a big yield for our total for our route average. But I do know that areas further west than we were and areas further north than we were are seeing some better yields up in that part of the state. So it will be interesting to see what we end up with in Minnesota when we throw all the samples together this evening.
Would you say that your route normally, this just, I take it you went north from Spencer and then hung a right and you're running through like,
yep,
along the southern border of Minnesota. I would think that would be some of the best corn country in Minnesota. Am I mistaken about that?
No, I think you're exactly right, Todd. But I think what happened was we went through kind of a dry stretch for a couple of weeks after pollination, and that's exactly the wrong time to get it. So it might be affecting some of the ear size and so on. But a bigger issue might be some of the nitrogen loss that we've had up here. And that might go back to the start of the year, Todd, when everybody was talking about cutting costs on corn production this year. If you skimped it all on nitrogen, I think it's going to show up because we're seeing some discolored fields in Minnesota. We're seeing it in the ear measurements as well in some fields. So it's not all picture perfect up here in Minnesota. But I think I know some guys. Talk to some other routes today. They're seeing better corn than what we are.
Well, we'll find out what those numbers look like later this evening. And then Brian Grady will join us for tomorrow's show and give us a wrap-up of what the tour results were and, more importantly, what your Pro Farmer results are, too. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You bet, Todd. Thanks, man.
That's Chip Flory on the western leg of the Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour. The Closing Market Report is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online at WILLAG.org. There you'll find all of our agricultural programming, and you can listen to it anytime you'd like. It's posted there not long after it airs on our radio stations. And in the case of Commodity Week, before it ever airs on a radio station, we'll record this afternoon. Commodity Week, it's our weekly look at the world of agricultural commodities.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
A couple of items in today's agricultural news. First, the ethanol industry plans to ask the EPA for a summertime waiver to blend more E15. That after an oil refinery outage in Indiana. The Renewable Fuels Association is preparing a formal request to EPA to boost E15 blending and allow blending of E12 after an unplanned refinery outage in Whiting, Indiana, caused a spike in Midwest gas prices. Here's the Renewable Fuels Association's Jeff Cooper.
We would need EPA to either waive any volatility requirements for E15 or allow the same treatment of volatility for E15 that EPA currently gives to 10% ethanol blends. They have done this before. They did it in 2005 following Hurricane Katrina.
Cooper says the Energy Department calls the latest Midwest refinery outage the largest shock to gas prices since Katrina. The RFA official says regular unleaded gasoline is averaging $2.65 to $2.70 a gallon in the Midwest now. That's up 40 to 50 cents from just a month ago. Cooper says the Indiana refinery outage is a perfect example of what happens when the country's too dependent on one fuel source.
It's one of the nation's largest refineries, but it's still only about 6 or 8% of the Midwest region's refining capacity. So just a little bit of outage of refining capacity can have dramatic impacts on gas prices. And so we think this really underscores the point that we need to be further diversifying our fuel supply to help isolate consumers from these types of price shocks.
But while ethanol can help offset petroleum losses, the two industries are, of course, in competition to sell more of their respective fuels to the same consumers. We'll move from the Midwest overseas, where China has cut its swine herd by over 110 million head. That in the past 2 years, 10 million of the culls were sows. And the result is a shortage of pork that's likely to be filled by sharply higher imports. Will Sawyer is a protein analyst with Rabo Food and Agribusiness Research. He gives an overview of the challenges facing Chinese pork producers.
Corn prices, while they may be $3 or $3.50 here in the U.S., they're over $9 a bushel in China. And that's due to the government policy there on grain, but it's something that the livestock industry, including the pork sector, has had to deal with. And as a result, supply has had to really ratchet down over the last year and a half.
The Chinese do not seem to mind that U.S. pork is fed using GMO grains, but forbids any pork that has been fed ractopamine, that's a growth hormone, which is commonly used in the U.S.
The GMO issue is not as much of the problem as ractopamine is the problem in the Chinese market. They are requiring all pork imports to be ractopamine-free, which is fine for the folks in Europe who also don't use ractopamine in their feed supply. But here in the U.S., we have to, segregate populations and production and processing capacity to be ractopamine-free if we're really going to take advantage of this Chinese market.
And Sawyer projects the Chinese demand for ractopamine-free products will change feeding practices and increase the volume of U.S. pork that China will accept.
Agricultural programming on WILL is made possible by Farm Credit Illinois, lending support to generations of farm families. Whether a young farmer or a seasoned grower, Farm Credit Illinois offers financial products and services geared specifically to the agricultural community.
It's National Chocolate Pecan Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1619, about 20 Africans were brought to Jamestown on a Dutch ship and traded for supplies. Most historians believe that these may be the first Africans to arrive in Virginia and signaled the beginnings of slave trade. In 1741, Danish explorer Vitus Bering, while on a mission sponsored by Russia, discovered Alaska. In 1866, the newly organized National Labor Union called on Congress to mandate an 8-hour workday. a coalition of skilled and unskilled workers, farmers, and reformers. The National Labor Union was created to pressure Congress to enact labor reforms. Although the NLU failed to persuade Congress to shorten the workday, its efforts heightened public awareness of labor issues and increased public support for labor reform in the 1870s and 1880s. In 1913, stainless steel was cast for the first time in Sheffield, England. Harry Brearley discovered how to make the steel that doesn't rust by accident. And in 1986, the U.S. Census Bureau reported that the U.S. population stood at 240,468,000, and the median age reached an all-time high of 31 and a half years. And that's This Day in Agricultural History.
Comes from Stewart Peterson. Since 1985, Stewart Peterson has offered strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. The firm develops dynamic strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. Information is available at stewart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on this Thursday afternoon. Mike Tenor of T-Storm Weather in Chicago joins us to take a look at the weather forecast for the Midwest, the nation, and the rest of the planet. Let's start in the Midwest, where we have had a gorgeous day for Agronomy Day. It's been cooler than expected under bright and clear sunshiny skies. We did have a little rain earlier in the week. What can you tell me about the rest of the next, 5 to 7 days?
Well, the next 5 to 7 days are fairly straightforward. We'll stay cool today and tomorrow, then we'll warm up a tiny bit on Saturday and Sunday, and then we'll quickly turn unseasonably cool again for Monday and Tuesday. So by the time you add all of this up, what you end up having is a continuation of far below normal temperatures over the next 5 to 6 days. Keep in mind that temperatures this morning were very cool across the northwest half of the Corn Belt. Low temperatures were all the way into the 40s, if you can believe it, across a pretty large chunk of the northwest Corn Belt, including sections of northern Iowa, Minnesota, and also into Nebraska and the Dakotas. Now, we don't think we'll see temperatures quite that cold across Illinois and points on to the east, but it will be in the 50s on several of the next mornings, and that's generally good at this time of the year. Corn and soybeans tend to have their highest yields when they are free of temperature stress during the grain fill or oilseed fill period, which is right now. So that's great news for the moment. What is not the best of news, though you can debate how good or bad it might be, is what happens after that. Once we get into Wednesday and Thursday, it does turn quite a bit warmer as upper-level high pressure develops. The real question is, how hot will it get and how long will it last? We're pretty confident that we'll see a few days in the 90s beginning Thursday or Friday of next week, and then that will last into next weekend. So we'll feel much more summerish here if you're just willing to wait one more week. We're not exactly sure how long that will last. There's conflicting information with some computer models making a fairly significant period of heat from late next week forward, while other pieces of information are much less aggressive with the heat. To date, we have not seen a significant heat wave, and because of that, and that some of the reasons that we see heat in the forecast from these models has not actually occurred to date, lead us to conclude that, yeah, we will turn warmer, but as far as the long-duration heat wave that will last 7 to 10 days, we still think that's pretty unlikely at this point.
No, those warm temperatures aren't terrible, I suppose, for the crops, and they don't appear to last very long. But oftentimes it's the nighttime lows, if they're very warm, that become troublesome. Will that come along with the warmer weather, higher temperatures in the evening as well?
Well, we would think so. You'd see low temperatures in the 60s and 70s, but we don't really look at it that way. We don't think that's the best way to do it. What you really have to do if you want to understand what's happening temperature-wise is you need to look at the minimum, you need to look at the maximum, and you need to take those two numbers, divide by two, and see what you have, and then compare that to the actual normal for the day. If you're real warm at night, but you're real cool during the day, you might actually have a great day for corn and soybean development, even though if you isolate the low temperature, you might not conclude that.
Hey, thanks so much, and I appreciate the explanation. That is very, very helpful, Mike.
Well, you're welcome, and have a great day, and we'll hope that some of this nice weather continues to last.
Absolutely. Mike Tenora, of course, is with T-Storm Weather in Chicago, Illinois, joins us on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report.